Good morning, everyone. We do have a couple of announcements. First, as we think about Hope today, it's a great time to think about those in need right here in our area and the work that is done by Hope Center. Please register today for the Taste of Hope fundraiser coming up on February 4th. You can sign up at hopecenterwi.org. Thank you, Eric. Or see Eric Larson if you have any questions. I'd also like to introduce our worship leader today. For those of you who don't know Reverend Lori Laban yet, she's an ordained minister. She was ordained to the ministry in May of 2010 here at Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. She received her Master's of Divinity from Chicago Theological Seminary and served her ministerial internship at Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine. Until 2015, she served as the assistant minister at the UU Church in Brookfield. Lori is a frequent pulpit guest at several congregations, and she and her spouse, Tom, are charter members here with us. We are happy to have Reverend Lori here today to lead us in worship.
Good morning. On this beautiful day, sunny, cold, crisp with promise, we gather with our hands reaching out in hope, our hearts beating with compassion. We come together in faith for support, for comfort, for strength, to remind us that out of many, we are one. Come, let us worship together. It is my great joy to be here with you this morning. This is the congregation in which our children were raised and which nurtured me into living into my call of ministry. I'm delighted to be here. At this moment, I would invite those of you who are out there to turn to the people near you and greet them. Say hello, introduce yourself to someone new if you like.
Thank you.
Our words for chalice lighting are from my colleague Christine Robinson. We gather this hour as people of faith with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning in celebration of the life we share together. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in our first hymn. It's number 1000 in the teal hymnal, Morning Has Come.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Christy Bowden, and I am happy to be the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. Whether you have known nothing but acceptance in your life or have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for your differences, you are always welcome here. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm you and all people, no matter who you love or how you live. So whether you view the glass as half empty, see it as half full, or just drink from it with nary a thought about the volume of its contents, welcome. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Also, in today's order of service, you can find additional ways to be involved this week. Like and follow us on Facebook, and check us out at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment now to silence any electronics you have here with you today. Again, welcome. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate here with us today.
So one of the ways that we care for the wider community is by contributing to the local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service, or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And then I invite the children to stay up in front and enjoy our story for all ages. Hey guys. One of the things I've always loved about this church community is that we have so many kids. So today we're talking about hope in the service with the grown-ups. And some people think hope is kind of like luck. You know, you get it, you have hope. But our story today is going to tell us what hope is, maybe. Our story is written by Sandy Eisenberg Sasso. She's a rabbi in the Reconstructionist movement of Judaism. Rabbi Sasso has written several books for children. All of them are my favorites, but this is one of the best. It's called Butterflies Under Our Hats. And Christy's going to turn the pages so you can see the pictures. Once, there was a town called Chelm, where there was no luck. If something could go wrong, it did. The roofs of the houses always leaked, the sidewalks were cracked. The gardens grew only weeds. Nothing was ever right. Some people said, well, luck comes and goes, but in Chelm's case, it never came, it only went. Others said, there's no such thing as luck. The people of Chelm, though, were certain that luck was real, and somewhere they had lost it. They looked everywhere for luck, in beds and in basements, in pants pockets and pickle barrels, in water wells and wicker baskets, but as luck would have it, they never found any. We never have any luck, they sighed, and so they gave up. They stopped building houses and delayed repairing sidewalks and quit planting gardens. Then one day, a strange and beautiful woman came to town. No one had ever seen her before. She wore a large purple felt hat over her brilliant red hair and a long green dress that matched her eyes. She told the people of Chelm that there was something better than luck. Better than luck? The people weren't sure they believed her, but they listened anyway. Having lost their luck, what else did they have to lose? Tomorrow at daybreak, said the strange woman with the purple hat and green eyes, butterflies of hope are going to fly into the town square. If you can manage to cover the butterflies with your hats, you will have hope, and hope is better than luck. Now, some of the townspeople thought the woman was crazy. Nothing was better than luck, but others weren't so sure. The next morning, just as the sun began to rise, the people of Chelm, who couldn't find any luck, went into the town square to look for hope. Well, just as the red-haired, green-eyed woman had said, clouds of beautiful butterflies appeared. They landed on the ground, and for a few moments, they just sat there, their wings fluttering softly. The people were very quiet. Then they gently placed their hats over the butterflies. There were silk top hats and woolen caps and black berets and bonnets with bows. There might even be some pink cowboy hats. There were felt fedoras and high hats with pink polka dots. There were fancy fur hats and silly straw hats with feathers, all covering the town square. We have it, the people exclaimed. Now we have hope. But just as they said those words, began to rain. The drizzle became a downpour, and suddenly the people needed their hats. One by one, they took their silk top hats and woolen caps, their black berets and bonnets with bows, felt fedoras and high hats and pink cowboy hats and hats with pink polka dots and fancy fur hats and silly straw ones. They took them back. And one by one, the butterflies disappeared. They watched as the last person lifted his hat and the last butterfly flapped its wings and rose into the sky. Ah. Now, not only don't we have any luck, they sighed, we have lost hope as well. But at that very moment, the red-haired, green-eyed woman appeared once again. Her large-brimmed purple felt hat collected the raindrops and kept her hair dry. "Look under your hats," she whispered. Well, the people were puzzled. They had seen the butterflies vanish into the clouds. They were certain that there was nothing left under their hats. The butterflies were gone, and with them, their last hope. But as quickly as the rains had come, they stopped. The people lifted their hats, all their fancy and silly hats, and they looked inside. And just as they had thought, there were no butterflies. "Look," they showed the mysterious woman, "nothing. There is nothing under our hats." "Look again," she whispered, and then she disappeared. Well, the people looked under their hats again, under their felt fedoras and high hats with polka dots, and they could hardly believe it. The butterflies were gone, but they had left a trace of something like a fine, faint powder. They could barely see it, the trace of vanished butterflies. And that was all they needed, hope. The people of Chelm got busy. They started building houses, repairing sidewalks, and planting gardens. Sometimes their roofs still leaked, and their sidewalks still got cracked, but not always. Their gardens still grew weeds, but they also grew flowers and good vegetables. The people of Chelm no longer looked for luck. They had found something much, much better. And it was there all along, right under their hats. So what's under your hat? If you put a hat on, what's under your hat? Our head. And what's in your head? Your brain. Your brain. Yeah, think about that when you think about the story. It's the end of the story for today, and I hope you'll take the seed of wisdom with you and think about it and maybe talk about it with your friends and family. Maybe you have other ideas about where to find hope, because that's what I'm going to talk about with the adults. And if you have more ideas, I hope that you will share those with others too. And so now may we have our lantern bearer. May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. And as our children go off to religious education classes, please help sing them out. The words are in your order of service. It's called For You Shall Go Out.
The morning offering will now be given and received. Our thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and work of this community. This is the time in our service when we share our joys and concerns. We do this by speaking them aloud and lighting a candle. If you would like to share what is on your mind or in your heart, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
My name is Eric. Please light a candle of hope for all the people struggling with helplessness, hopelessness, and despair. There was someone in my kitchen last night who was feeling very dark.
Please think of Barbara Begale, who totaled her car yesterday, they suggested that she go to the hospital, but she refused. She's very shook up.
Hi, my name is Chris. I would like to have a candle of hope lit for myself as I'm going to be having surgery in the near future. This is Esther. On Friday the 15th, Jerry is supposed to have surgery for a hernia, which has developed in the same area as where he had his gallbladder removed in September. So we expect it to go well, but I guess I don't know how this all happened. Shoveling? He did that a couple weeks ago, which was very heavy, I guess. But anyway, hoping it all goes well.
This is Chris. I guess a candle of joy that my husband Scott had hernia surgery on Friday, and all did go well. So I guess we have a little bit of hope that he continues to stay laying low for the next 2 weeks. That's going to be the main concern.
Christy, would you light the last candle? This is the candle that represents all of those hopes and joys and sorrows that are in our hearts, that are held deeply, but are not expressed this morning. Blessed be.
About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. And I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one, and I believe it could be something good has to come. On the edge of darkness there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. And I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Peace train sounding louder, guide on the peace train. Come on the peace train, ah, peace train, holy roller, everyone jump on the peace train. Oh, come on now, peace train, get your bags together, go bring your fruit friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. And come and join the living, it's not so far from you, and it's getting nearer, soon it will be with you. Now I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder, ride on the peace train. everyone jump on the peace train. Come on the peace train.
Thank you, Doug, for your gift of music. And thank you, Tracy, as well. Tracy's also playing music today. Our first reading is titled Gardenia, and it is by Joanna Fontaine Crawford. Joanna is a friend and a colleague who maintained an online blog of her experiences during her time in seminary. This entry is from April 2009. The year Little Warrior was going through cancer the first time, my family planted a gardenia bush outside my front door for me for Mother's Day. It wasn't much of a bush, pretty small, but though it was too new to bloom, it sent out roots and grew strong. The year after, Little Warrior was also strong, and we were out of cancer land. The gardenia really was a bush now, and covered with blooms. Most days, I would pick one of the almost spent blooms and put it in my car where I could enjoy the fragrance. Last spring, the gardenia bloomed more profusely. The morning that I took Little Warrior to the hospital to see if the spots on her CAT scan were cancer, I picked a blossom. During the long drive to the medical center, I enjoyed its smell, occasionally picking it up off the dashboard so that I could breathe it in more deeply. As I parked the car, I left it on the dashboard, knowing that it would be several days before I was in the vehicle again. By the time I got in the car to drive home again, laden with information sheets and appointments with specialists, the gardenia blossom had dried into a crackly, shrunken knob. Through that summer, I picked the gardenia blossoms, putting them on the dashboard as we drove back and forth to radiation, back and forth to chemo, back and forth to the hospital. Months later, as I left my house to go to a covenant group meeting at my church, I found the first gardenia of the season, open and fragrant. I plucked it and took it with me. At church, it lay next to the chalice as I lit the flame and did the reading. One of the group members picked it up and inhaled deeply, smiling with pleasure. Throughout the meeting, we enjoyed the gardenia's sweet perfume. Our topic was hope. When it's hard to find, where do you look? More than once, we referenced the gardenia as an emblem that life goes on. Throughout it all, home or hospital, happiness or despair, the gardenia continues to bloom. After our meeting, after our closing words were said, our chalice extinguished, I picked up the gardenia. There's a homeless man who sleeps in the vestibule of our church. We keep a blanket folded there for him. I left the gardenia on top. Here ends our reading, but here's an update. It's 2015. And Little Warrior is a happy, healthy 10-year-old. I invite you now to join me in the spirit of meditation and prayer. I have spoken words, we'll share some silence, and we'll close with some more words. Spirit of life and love, moving in us and through us as we breathe and move through this world, on this lovely, lovely morning. We are grateful that we are past the longest night of the year and getting just a little bit more light each day. We can look back on this past month with its celebrations and holidays, which some of us wholeheartedly and joyfully celebrated, while others have a more complicated relationship to holidays and family. The events of the world serve to remind us that we live in a world of uncertainty, a world where many are touched with grief and pain and private sorrow. We know that among those gathered here, some are celebrating personal and public triumphs with great joy. Some are grieving or suffering some other private sorrow. We're grateful for this gathering and community, this house of hope and comfort, where we share our dreams and our disappointments, our happiness and our hardships. For this is a place where we know we can speak and be heard. We can bring our brokenness and find healing. We can express our hunger and be nourished. And in the silence, for a moment, we can embrace our thoughts and listen for that still, small voice within. Spirit of life and love, as we gather here, let us be mindful of one another's joys and sorrows, and of the triumphs and troubles of our world. Help us be resolved to renew ourselves in our commitments to our highest aspirations, always moving toward the common good. Blessed be, and amen.
Our second reading is Hope by Craig Schwalenberg, modeled after J. Ruth Gendler's Book of Qualities. Hope is quiet. She is easily overlooked. And while she goes to all the parties, and though she loves crowds and gatherings, she is rarely seen. People often forget to invite her, and just as often forget she was present. But Hope doesn't mind. She likes the hustle and bustle. She likes doing small things while people aren't looking. Straightening pictures on the wall. Carrying empty dishes to the kitchen. A helping hand here and there. Rarely noticed. When she was a child, Hope had an unfortunate experience with a game of hide and seek. When her cousin Fear had been found, the kids they were playing with stopped looking for Hope. As a young adult, Hope had numerous relationships. They rarely lasted. Her lovers held her too tight. They were really in love with her cousin, Fear. They were too afraid to say so. Hope and Fear are both best friends with change. And they often go traveling together. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing number 346. Come sing a song with me.
Thank you.
hope. For some of us, just saying the word hope conjures up the well-known bit of poetry from Emily Dickinson. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. I had to memorize that in high school, I think. But it also reminds me of the Greek myth of Pandora's box. Some of you might remember that. In the myth, Prometheus steals something very precious from the gods. He steals fire. With fire, people are less dependent on the goodwill of the gods for their lives. Of course, this makes the gods what? Angry. Gods don't like having things taken from them. So they created a young woman whom they called Pandora. Pandora was given many very special gifts. She was given beauty and music and pleasant speech and charm and most especially that most human of qualities, curiosity. When she was ready, the gods sent Pandora to be a wife for Prometheus' brother, Epimetheus. And the gods also sent along a gift for the couple, a beautifully decorated box, elaborately carved and inlaid with precious gems, which Pandora was instructed to give to her husband and never, ever, ever open. At first, all was well. Pandora and Epimetheus were newlyweds, after all, and they had better things to do than wonder about this apparently lavish gift bestowed upon them. But Epimetheus knew something about the gods, and he knew how jealous and tricky they could be, and he wondered what was up with this present. So he saddled up his horse, and he told Pandora he would be back in a couple of days, and that she was under no circumstances to even touch the box while he was gone. He then rode for 2 days and nights to find his brother and ask him what he thought of this mysterious box. Well, upon hearing Epimetheus' story, Prometheus sent him straight home because whatever was in that box couldn't be good if it came from the gods, and Epimetheus never should have left Pandora alone with it. Meanwhile, back at home, Pandora did all of the good housewifely things, right? She cleaned and dusted the house and prepared her simple meals and waited for her husband's return. When she cleaned, she was drawn to the ornate box, curious about what it might contain that was so precious. At first, she was afraid to even touch it with her dustcloth. But nothing happened when she got up the courage to just quickly polish the gems on its surface. So she went back to carefully clean the ornate carvings. And finally she convinced herself, well, she should just take a peek inside, just for a second, just to make sure the inside was as clean as the outside. But when she lifted the lid, out came a boiling, buzzing black cloud, which soon revealed many strange-looking, bizarre winged creatures which flew about her head and then battered at the door and the windows, and Pandora managed to slam the lid back on the box. But the creatures found the one window that was open, just a crack, and they flew out, dispersing on the wind to the four corners of the earth. Meanwhile, Epimetheus, on his way home, drew closer and closer and started seeing things he'd never seen before. He saw friends arguing with one another. He saw apples on healthy trees shriveling. He saw destruction. He saw disease. He saw despair. When he arrived home, he found his wife, his beautiful wife, Pandora, huddled on the floor near the box, weeping. She told Epimetheus what she'd done, and that as she put the lid back on the box, she glimpsed something else, something shiny which remained within. Well, curious about the shiny thing, Epimetheus and Pandora opened the box one more time. What did they have to lose? To their surprise, something silvery and radiant rose from its depths. Hope. In some versions of this story, hope takes the form of a bird, like Dickinson's Thing with Feathers. In other versions, it appears as a fragrant flower, perhaps like Joanna's gardenia. Somehow, Pandora and Epimetheus knew all those hurtful, mean, and destructive things, the black buzzing cloud of creatures, they could be seen as punishment from the gods for not obeying, but they could also be viewed as part of the fullness of life. For life includes wonderful things and can also include difficult and tragic times. Yet there is hope. Hope. The dictionary says that as a noun, hope is the feeling that what is wanted can be had, or that events will turn out for the best. As a verb, hope is to look forward to with desire and reasonable confidence. Now, you might have noticed that in both of these definitions, there's a positive sense that whatever is wished for or expected will arrive. I think of this as tooth fairy hope. When my children were young and losing baby teeth, they hoped for money from the tooth fairy. Honestly, they knew they were getting some coins. They knew they were getting money, but I'm sure they hoped for more than they actually received. The point is that this kind of hope is like saying, I hope the sun comes up in the morning. The sun will come up. Even if it's cloudy, it's up there and we know it. It's a sure thing. Well, your experience may be different from mine, but hoping for a sure thing, that's easy. Hoping for something that seems unlikely or even impossible, yeah, that's a lot harder. And there are a lot of reasons for hopelessness right now. Here are a few off the top of my head. The cost of higher education. Crushing student debt that holds a whole generation of our young people hostage to our future. Mass incarceration. Did you know that statistically there are more people of color incarcerated today than were held in slavery prior to World War II, or the Civil War? We see continuing assaults on our environment, mass shootings in the news, the rise of violence in general, and of course, cutbacks in funds for the homeless, the hungry, and those unable to afford the basics of life. Sounds like a contemporary language version of that strange looking winged creatures causing disease, destruction, and despair, doesn't it? It's enough to make me want to go back to bed and pull the covers over my head and just wait it out. I have friends, as I'm sure many of you do, who constantly bemoan the awful state of the world. We're going to hell in a handbasket. It's terrible. Everything's wrong. And yet, those friends also maintain a steadfast sense of hope. Because they are the ones who write letters to elected officials, who speak out at public hearings on a variety of issues, who volunteer their time when and where they can, who show up for vigils, who march and protest for peace, for justice. And they recruit others to write letters, speak out at public hearings, volunteer their time, show up at vigils, march and protest. This is hope. Unlike the dictionary definitions, I want to propose that hope is not passively expecting that things will turn out well and just waiting for that to happen. For many years, I've held a quote from former playwright, political prisoner, and later elected president of the Czech Republic, Václav Havel, as my own personal mantra on hope. Havel wrote, quote, Either we have hope within us or we don't. It is a dimension of the soul, and it's not essentially dependent on some particular observation of the world or estimate of the situation. Hope is not prognostication. It is an orientation of the spirit, an orientation of the heart. It transcends the world that is immediately experienced and is anchored somewhere beyond its horizons. Hope is definitely not the same thing as optimism. It is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. End quote. The certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. Wendell Berry elsewhere has suggested that hope must be founded on the ground under our feet. Hope is lighted by the light that is within us, the light of imagination, which allows us to envision a better future than the present in which we live. Now, when I shared this quote from Havel with some of my seminary classmates a few years ago, they were dismayed that there was nothing there to assure one that your goal could be attained. They wanted an optimistic sort of hope. They wanted, I do A, hoping for B, and because A works, then B occurs. Problem solved. Sometimes the world works like that. Mix together a specified list of ingredients, bake at the right temperature for the prescribed time, and voila, your hope for muffins for breakfast can be fulfilled. But more often, there's no linear path from the point of desire to the goal attained. What makes sense may not lead one immediately from A to B. A may seem to have no effect or lead to something else, but it may still be an incremental, almost unnoticeable step of progress toward B. Furthermore, and quite perversely, on occasion, what looks like something good will turn out to be harmful, while something that may not be desired turns out to be helpful. So how do we find or create hope when all seems hopeless? I believe that this orientation of the spirit can be cultivated. And these words attributed to Joan Baez seem to be the key. Action is the antidote to despair. Action is the antidote to despair. And there are many ways to take action. First, you can take a look around and see what actions others are doing. See if you can find anything that doesn't cause you despair. See if you can see sources of hope that are already evident. You know, the words of Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, are shared often after disasters and many terrible events, and are helpful for many. He says to look for the helpers, look for those first responders, those people helping others. Look at the good work and all that others are doing to help people. So look around. Look for the good things happening in your family, in your community. Looking to find an obvious source of hope is kind of an internal action. You're not taking action yourself. But it is an action, and it helps. It's a little action that none of the rest of us can really see. Now, my colleague Meg Riley says it's also important to make choices in your actions that help sustain a positive focus, to find ways that enable you to claim your own agency. For Meg, maintaining a positive focus means avoiding some news media outlets, which she believes just fan the flames of panic and induce a sense of helplessness. And you know, after I heard Meg say that, I noticed that even the news outlets that I like can make me feel anxious and agitated. I think she's onto something. Now, claiming agency, your ability to act when feeling overwhelmed can be difficult, but it is an important step. Making a choice to do something, even if it's a very small thing, supports one's sense of hope. Maybe it's something as simple as opting to smile at the people you encounter during your day. Or saying something encouraging when you see a parent struggling in a store with their young children. Or maybe purchasing a few extra pairs of mittens or socks to donate to a homeless shelter for families. These are small things that are probably easy for many of us, but they're very important. A smile and a thanks to a harried clerk just might make that clerk's day and will make you feel better too. A smile and, "I remember those days and how difficult it is to shop with children," helps the parent who's struggling know that they're not alone and that they're not a bad parent and that this too shall pass. Donating a few pairs of mittens or socks for an individual or family who has none is a gift more precious than gold. Small acts like this nurture your own sense of hope and help encourage a lighter spirit and hope in others. Another choice that one can make is to work with a group in which members of the group support one another and sometimes really get to see change happen. And if you look, you can find hopeful acts in the public square all around. I remember about 10 years ago, a group of folks from this church actually worked against the Wisconsin Marriage Amendment. That was a very hopeful act. And when it passed, despite our best efforts, we commiserated with one another. For me, as a minister, performing weddings is always a joyous occasion. Performing weddings for gay and lesbian couples before marriage equality was a supremely hopeful act. And every such wedding I've officiated for since has been extra celebratory. Some other hopeful acts have a specific focus like this, like volunteering for a Habitat for Humanity project. This fulfills hope for a particular family, but it is also an act of hope for a neighborhood, for a community, indeed for our world. Some acts are even bigger and kind of play out on the national stage. My colleague Barbara Gayden and members of her congregation outside St. Louis, Missouri, have held a weekly vigil, rain, shine, snow, outside their church since the death of Michael Brown over a year ago. They're holding hope out in the public square. I'm sure you're aware of other purposeful groups of people peacefully marching, demonstrating, and yes, demanding justice and better behavior from law enforcement and lawmakers. These are hopeful acts. Engaging them in them as a group helps everyone stay focused, helps everyone avoid despair. And sometimes hopeful acts from one group inspire others in different places and times. Nonviolent civil disobedience was used very effectively in India in the early to mid-20th century by the Mahatma Gandhi and his followers. That same idea traveled to the United States and fueled much of the 1960s civil rights movement, with students and others trained to not react to all manner of verbal and physical abuse. Those past movements continue to inform activists today. Hope is and must be active. But here's the thing. Darn it. We cannot know, ultimately, whether our virtuous acts will in fact lead to good results or any results. But remember, it took 75 years for women to win the right to vote. And most of those who worked for women's suffrage did not live to cast a legal vote. A century passed between the Emancipation Proclamation and the passage of the Voting Rights Act. With this kind of long-term perspective, it is amazing that we have come as far as we have in the work towards civil rights for people of color, and especially civil rights for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons. Stonewall was 1968, Marriage equality, 2015. Somebody else do the math. 38 years? About? 48 years? Sometimes it's enough to know that we've done what we can. Sometimes it's enough to remember that we don't know what small act may mean all the difference to someone somewhere. And that's all well and good when we're talking about those big, awful things like unemployment and assault on the environment and crushing student debt. But when hope is personally hard to find, where do we look? Can we really give someone else hope, as our hymn said? I confess that sometimes when I sing those words, I feel like it's impossible. But a UCC colleague wrote her personal and very difficult story, difficult to hear, story of hope, which she gave me permission to share, and I'll share just a little bit of it. When she was a college freshman, my friend was assaulted and afterward suicidal and felt truly hopeless. Hospitalized, she told her mother that she just didn't have any hope. And she wrote, quote, "My mom said to me, 'That's okay. I'll hold the hope for you. I'll hope for you, and you can pick it up when you're ready.'" There was something about that statement that really was incredibly comforting, because often when you need hope the most, it's the hardest to generate on your own. In some ways, by telling me she was holding the hope, it kind of gave me hope to begin with. End quote. So where do we find hope? Where do you find hope? There is no one answer. We can find hope in assurance that life goes on. We can find hope in gardenias. We can find hope in our children. We can find hope and create hope in our actions for others and for the common good. We can hold hope for others when they're unable to do so for themselves. Let your hope be founded on the ground under your feet. Let it be lighted by the light that is within you, the light of your imagination, the light of courage and of care for others. Come, share your hope with me, and I'll share mine with you, and we will sing a song of love and justice for the whole world. So may it be.
Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing our closing hymn this week, number 131 in your gray hymnal, "Love Will Guide Us."
Thank you.
as we came together in faith for support, for comfort, and strength, let us go forth now carrying peace in our hearts, acting with compassion toward others, holding hope for one another, knowing we are held in a web of past and present hope and ever-present love. Blessed be, and amen.